Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, talking parrots, barking dogs, and counter surfers. We'll explore what's behind these behaviors and how to work with each of them. And we'll start with Tales from the Bark Side, Tips for Turning Yappy Hours into Quiet Times. This is written by Kelly L. Williams for All Animals Magazine, the September-October 2017 edition. A barking dog could be trying to tell you all sorts of things. In my childhood home, nearly any disturbance, a distant car horn, the creak of the mailbox opening, set off a cacophony of barking. Tamale, the chihuahua, usually started it with a series of high-pitched, frantic yips. Then Mistletoe, a miniature dachshund, joined in with her slower, deeper barks. Their combined noise built to a terrible climax that usually ended with human yelling. Not the ideal situation, and we knew it, but we never took the time to explore why exactly our dogs barked as much as they did. And that's the key to resolving barking issues, says Kenny Lamberti, HSUS Acting Vice President of Companion Animals. Dogs bark for a lot of different reasons. They could be bored. They could be lonely. There could be stimulation. So if your canine companion voices her opinion more frequently than you'd like, take a step back and study the situation. Here's how to start. Rethink barking. You wouldn't get mad at a fish for swimming, says Lamberti, but with dogs, we identify things as problem behaviors that, to the dog, are normal dog behaviors. Barking, though occasionally annoying to human listeners, is an important communication tool for dogs. Before seeking help from a behaviorist or trainer, ask yourself whether the barking is really causing an issue. If it's not exactly bothering you or anyone else, it might not be a problem at all. All dogs have their own individual quirky personality, says Lamberti. Maybe yours just happens to be a loudmouth. Become a PI or a pup investigator. Unfortunately, even a normal behavior can cause issues. You have to call it a problem if someone is bothered by it, says Laura L. Bennett, a veterinarian and behavior consultant in Southwest Indiana. And if you live close to other people, in an apartment, for example, your neighbors might have something to say about your canine chatterbox. If you need to reduce your dog's barking, start by investigating what triggers it. Before joining the Humane Society of the United States, or HSUS, Lamberti worked as a dog trainer. One of the best things I used to tell people to do is get a little cheap 50-cent spiral notebook, he says. When your dog exhibits the behavior, just write down what you see and hear going on. And if you do that enough times, you'll start to see a trend. Maybe your dog reacts when the refrigerator compressor kicks on or when a neighbor runs the vacuum. You can even enlist your neighbor's help, says Bennett. Not only might they be home when you're not, but it can reassure them that you're working on the barking issue. I think that helps with the frustration component from the neighbor's standpoint, she says. Bennett experienced this for herself. During veterinarian school, when she was gone for long periods, her puppy, Ruby, started frantically barking every afternoon. She set up video cameras but couldn't catch the trigger. Finally, she asked a neighbor, and she said, "Oh, my daughter gets off the school bus at 2:30, so my dog was hearing the school bus and barking." Whether you take notes, set up a webcam, or rely on neighborly knowledge, the more information you can gather, the better. Bennett recommends identifying when the barking happens, how long it lasts, and any possible triggers. Come up with a strategy. The results of your investigation will guide your next steps. Maybe your dog is responding to a straightforward stimulus. They've created an association behavior to it. When the mailman comes, I bark, explains Lamberti. In that situation, your job is to make a new, more appropriate behavioral connection to that thing. Take the case of the mail carrier. Every time the mailman comes, you would create a little routine, says Lamberti. Ask your dog to sit, lie down, shake, whatever she knows how to do. And when they do, they get a hug, or they get a pat on the head, or they get a snack, or they get their favorite ball. Try to catch the behavior before the dog barks. So you're replacing the old response, the barking, with the new one, sitting and getting a reward. Simple environmental changes can reduce barking even if you're not home when it happens. If your work schedule means you're not home when your dog barks, simple environmental changes could help. A white noise machine or radio could drown out triggering sounds. In the case of Bennett and her puppy Ruby, the solution was fairly straightforward. We moved her crate to the other side of the house and we left a TV on for her. Dogs might bark if they're bored or frustrated, which often happens when they're home alone all day. Hire a midday dog walker if you can, and provide toys that will keep your dog's mind busy. It's best if such toys reward intermittently or for a specific duration, says Lamberti. A Buster Cube, stuffed Kong, or an inexpensive puzzle-type toy will usually do the trick. Separation anxiety, which Bennett notes is a behavior disorder, not a training problem, also drives some dogs to bark. Those first 30 minutes after you leave are the hot zone, says Lamberti. So a toy that distracts your dog for that half hour could turn your previously stressful departure into a positive event. Then they focus on the toy for a while, and they get rewarded for it, and they fall asleep. For more severe cases of separation anxiety, try changing the environment. Sometimes the amount of space that they have can impact the amount of anxiety that they have, says Bennett. Some dogs feel more secure in a smaller, cozier area, like a crate, while others do better when given free rein of the house. You can also try a white noise machine or calming music. Experiment to find out what makes your dog most comfortable, and don't make arrivals and departures a big deal. Keep things low-key instead. And finally, bring in the pros. If you can't solve your dog's issues on your own, it might be time to call in an expert. Your vet can recommend a behaviorist or trainer, or she might suggest medication. Bennett describes medication as a temporary tool in our toolbox. She uses it to reduce a dog's anxiety as he learns that specific triggers aren't so scary after all. Regardless of the steps you take, remember that barking is a normal canine behavior and that all dogs are individuals. Some of those individuals, a certain Chihuahua and Dachshund, for example, just have louder mouths than others. Next, 10 tips to teach your pet parrot to talk. What pet birds are most likely to talk? What easy words should you teach your pet parrot, and more? Budgies, also known as American parakeets, are one of the best talking birds. It just might be hard to understand what they're saying because they have tiny voices. This was written by Diane Grindle for Petya. All of the parrot species have the anatomy required to imitate human speech or talk. This is one of the attributes that makes parrots alluring to people and certainly sets them apart from other companion animal species. While all the parrots can talk, in theory, some are better mimics than others, and some species are more likely to talk. Some of our parrots have an accent or talk in mechanicals, especially fast or barely intelligible speech. If you have a female cockatiel, or a budgie or parakeet, it's very unlikely your pet bird will talk at all. Here are some ideas about teaching your pet bird to talk. First, will your pet bird talk? A pet bird is most likely to talk if it is a naturally vocal species and it is still young. Furthermore, your pet bird is most likely to talk if you are a verbal person and a verbal family. Finally, if your pet bird already talks or mimics sounds, then you have a good chance of teaching it words. Some of the species of pet birds that talk readily include the Congo African gray parrots and Timna African gray parrots, double yellow-headed Amazon parrots, and yellow-naped Amazon parrots, Eclectus parrots, and Indian ring-necked parakeets. Of the macaws, the blue and gold macaw talks most readily. Among cockatoos, the bare-eyed and rose-breasted are often talkative. Lories are great talkers if you can supply them with their nectar diet. The African poicephalus parrots, like the Senegal and Myers, can learn to talk, though their voices are not easy to understand. The same is true of the Poinus parrots, of which the Maximilian's Poinus talks most clearly. I've known cakes that talked well. Some of the grass parakeets can talk, and the male budgie can learn literally hundreds of words. Male cockatiels can learn a few words, especially while they're still young. Any of these parrots may talk, or they may not talk at all. I have known particularly silent grays, and sometimes pets sit for a Moluccan cockatoo that is unusually verbal. With our parrots, talking ability is a bonus, not a given. It's worth working with the pet bird on its talking ability. Keep in mind that even a non-talking pet bird can communicate and can understand your words. Your pet bird may learn to talk. It is most likely to learn to talk from you. Studies done in the 90s on wild bird vocalization showed that young birds learned a flock language from other birds after they left the nest. In our homes, we become a pet bird's flock, and the vocalizations it learns might therefore include our language just as it would learn a flock language in the wild. Social interaction is required for a pet bird to learn to talk. You won't have much success just leaving media playing with repeated phrases. Your pet bird will learn words you say to it, especially if the words involve food, a bath, your presence, or are said enthusiastically. Number two, what are some easy words or phrases for most pet birds to learn? Pet birds learn words associated with the things they want most readily. Name foods you feed your pet bird, for example. Start teaching it the difference between banana, apple, and orange, or between seed and nut. You can do this with your pet bird, even if it does not answer. My Poinus reacts when I say nut, a favorite treat. When your pet bird starts making a sound or intonation remotely like one of these words, give it the food item as a reward and say the word you think it is saying. You can also associate words with your actions. Say hello and goodbye as you enter and exit the house. Pet birds like company and will quickly learn hello, come in, and what are you doing? Used when you first enter a room. Say goodbye every time you leave, and also use the same words when you cover the cage each night. Say night-night, good-night, or bedtime, for example. Chances are your pet bird will pick up those phrases. Number three, should you say different words to your pet bird to see which one it picks up? Or should you repeat the same word or phrase every day and then move on to another word or phrase a week or two later if it doesn't take? Is there a certain way to say the word or phrase? Should you say it low and slow or loud and proud? Parrots also learn words that you say enthusiastically very easily. That's why a pet bird may repeat an exclamation or foul language after hearing it only once, while ignoring the polite word you are trying to teach it. It's amazing how many pet birds can say shut up, be quiet, or ouch. You can learn two things from this. Watch your language around your pet bird. It's likely to pick up phrases from you, whether you are teaching them to it on purpose or not. And B, when you want a pet bird to learn to say something, say it with enthusiasm, loudly, excitedly, and in a high voice. vary your voice, but use the same word. This makes learning to say grape very exciting and memorable. Number four, how can you tell if it is chatter or if your pet bird is really saying something? When a pet bird is first learning a new word or phrase, it generally doesn't speak clearly. Get excited when a pet bird appears to be imitating something you're saying by saying it back to the pet bird. First mutterings are just that, mutterings or whistles with an inflection like speech, or mumbling that is inflected like speech, even though the words aren't clear. The woman whose parakeet Puck was the most talking pet bird in the Guinness Book of Records in 1995 actually recorded her parakeet's chatter and slowed it down to hear the words it said. Parakeets generally talk in a high pitch and very fast. What you take to be a budgie's chatter could actually be words. Listen carefully and consider words and slowing down its speech. Consider recording and slowing down its speech. Number five, can one pet bird teach another a word or phrase? Pet birds learn from each other. In the wild, a bird would be learning the flock language from its flock mates. In our homes, flock mates are as varied as the family dog, you and your housemates or family, and the other pet birds in the household. Pet birds can learn to tell each other to be quiet, to greet each other by name, or to all use the same name. I once had a flock of cockatiels in which the males all learned to say, "Jonesy's a pretty bird," because Jonesy knew how to say that. Six, is it better to try to teach a pet bird to talk while it's in a cage, or should you put it on a play gym or hold it? If you are going to teach your pet bird a vocalization as a learned behavior with no relation to an action or reward, then choose a quiet place in which to work and put your pet bird on a tea stand. Keep distractions to a minimum. Repeat a phrase like, "pretty bird," several times and reward your pet bird for any vocalization, then eventually for the correct one. If you are teaching a pet bird to say hello, goodbye, or to name a treat, then your pet bird could be in its cage or on a stand. If a pet bird learns to name a food like nut, seed, apple, be sure to reward it with the appropriate food. Number seven, are certain times of the day better to work with a pet bird on its vocabulary? Is the morning better than the afternoon? It's fine to work with your pet bird any time of day and several times a day, as a matter of fact. Get in the habit of talking to your pet bird as though it's a young child. Talk about what is going on and what you're doing, and especially talk about things that interest your pet bird. Number eight. Can a pet bird lose a word or phrase if it's not reinforced enough? Will your pet bird forget it if you don't repeat it? Trainers call the process of behavior disappearing extinction. If a behavior, like saying a word, is not reinforced, then it usually goes away. Your pet bird could forget a word or phrase if you do not react to it and if you stop saying it yourself. On the other hand, birds do seem to have long memories. If you want an old phrase back, you could help your bird remember it. Nine. How do you get a pet bird to start a new word or phrase if it constantly says the same thing over and over? You can promote the extinction of the worn-out phrase by not reacting to it. Don't look at the pet bird, respond verbally to it, or repeat the phrase. Try to add a word by responding with a new word every time your pet bird says the old one. You could start whispering another word, which many pet birds find rather irresistible. Or you can start a duet with your pet bird. Birds are musical and duet in the wild. Let your pet bird take one part and sing another word till it gets into the repertoire. And once again, naming things for your pet bird is a good way to add a word to its vocabulary. And number 10, does the pet bird need to be tame in order to learn to repeat words or phrases? The wonderful thing about talking is that it is an experience you can share with your parrot, no matter what level of tameness it is. Parrots are vocal and social. Use those traits to start interacting in a positive way with an untamed parrot. It will probably make you feel better about your pet bird. Talk across the room, name treats for it, and talk to it as you enter and exit the room. Singing with your parrot doesn't require tameness. Of course, it doesn't hurt if you have a musical voice. Budgie, parakeet, and cockatiel talking tips. Do both male and female budgies talk? Only male budgies are likely to talk. Even when a pet bird does not talk, it may understand what you say. Talk to your female budgie, and as she responds appropriately, reward her. A male budgie's repertoire can be huge. Puck, a budgie listed as the most talking bird in the Guinness World Records, said 1,770 words. Do both male and female cockatiels talk? It is male cockatiels that learn to whistle and talk. As a general rule, teaching a female cockatiel to talk is unlikely. Instead, teach her tricks or teach her to respond in other ways. If a cockatiel loves to whistle, does that make it more likely to talk or less likely? Vocalization and talking are linked. It's the loud parrots that talk the best, and the vocal or male cockatiels that whistle readily are good candidates for talking. My experience has been that male cockatiels learn a few words or phrases till they are about 2 years old, then don't add to their repertoire after that. Can you teach a budgie to speak more clearly? A budgie's talk will get clearer as it becomes sure of its words, up to the limits of its ability. At first, its words will be mumbled, but if you have an idea what it is saying or what you want it to be saying and repeat that phrase, when you hear your budgie talking, it should start to be intelligible. So there you have it, 10 tips to teach your pet parrot to talk. A little bit more. And now for the portion of the program I like to call Don't Eat That. Don't Let Your Puppy Be a Counter Surfer. Written by Geraldine Cada for Petcha. Preventing a puppy from countersurfing before he starts will safeguard both your puppy and your possessions. Countersurfing is tempting for a puppy, but there are ways to stop it before it starts. If your dog is a puppy, you're in luck. By beginning your training at an early age and acquiring the tools to guide and lead your puppy properly, you have powerful information for your puppy's future as an adult dog, and you can protect the future of your counters, furniture, and tables. Understanding puppy thinking. Puppies are so cute, and I love the way they smell. No matter the breed, they all grow and change so fast. It's tempting to always be in their face, kissing and hugging them like crazy. This seems so natural to us, but for a puppy, it is not a natural thing to experience. Once your puppy has had a lot of face time with you, he begins to associate your smell with comfort. This, in a limited amount, is okay and can help ease a puppy through one of his biggest fear periods in life, leaving home and joining a new family. However, if you continue to remain face-to-face with your puppy, you will create a puppy monster who will jump on you, your guests, your counters, and your furniture, not to mention anything else that your puppy feels will soothe him. This could mean chewing and swallowing socks, undies, dish towels, and anything that retains that comforting smell they were taught to desire with FaceTime. To help remedy this, begin by limiting time when you are face-to-face with your puppy. Too much face-to-face time only encourages him to strive to remain within close range of your face on a daily basis for comfort, no matter how big they grow. Can you imagine a 180-pound dog in your face or counter-surfing? Lessons from one dog's training journey. I began training Aspen as a puppy along with her owners. Aspen is an American Mastiff, a newer breed in the United States that is a mix of English Mastiff and Anatolian Mastiff. Her owners knew that fully grown, their new puppy would reach a weight of more than 100 pounds. Even though this breed drools less than the typical Mastiff, we definitely didn't want any drool on the kitchen counters. A plan had to be put into place immediately. American Mastiffs have an amazing temperament, so we knew she would be very responsive to our training. Despite her temperament, however, her expected size would require strong leadership. We decided that if the owners kept her off the counters from the beginning, life would be easier for them and lessen their possible future vet bills from accidental ingestion of dangerous items. Don't tempt that dog. Aspen grew from 25 pounds to 125 pounds within 1 year. Without a doubt, we knew that she would not only be hungry on a continual basis, she would also grow tall very quickly, reaching nose to counter height. We did what we had to do, and what has a 100% guaranteed success rate, we followed my rule of don't tempt the dog. This simply means to keep the counters and tables clear of anything that the dog could want and could be potentially harmful. If you cannot keep your counters clear and you have a puppy at home, consider placing baby gates in the doorways to secure the kitchen area, as it is a potentially harmful place for your pets. Now, there's another side to this I feel I need to address because it is important for your puppy's development. If you feed your dog people food, which is most likely something not good for your puppy will think that anything on the table or counter is fair game. If you're handing things down to him, especially if you have violated the rules of too much face time, you are setting yourself up for a multitude of dog problems on more than just the counters and the furniture. Not feeding from the table is especially important during holidays, including birthdays or special occasions, where there is a special meal prepared at home or even brought in from outside sources that is ultimately shared with the dog. Kids and dads can be the biggest violators, and they seem to love giving the under-the-table treat during mealtime. Teamwork training. For Aspen, we kept the counters clean. We also worked as a family unit with the kids, being a large part of our team. We taught Aspen all of the commands she had to know in order to become a service animal. We knew that she was going to be so big and have a lot of love to give, so we began immediately training her to lie down and maintain composure for at least 3 minutes, usually in a spot designated for her, but we chose other places as well. We trained her to walk by our side, allow friendly people to approach, and keep her composure while we talked to someone she didn't know. And finally, setting boundaries. We crate trained Aspen, and knowing that she was going to grow so large, we had her on a structured training, feeding, and sleeping schedule. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening. And please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.